back. WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I have I've been blessed here. Now beginning my 30th year of doing sports radio here in Baltimore. I began December 13th, 1991 with Kenny Albert on WITH AM 1230. And we're now coming up literally on the anniversary once again of the beginning of Camden Yards and the end of Memorial Stadium. And during New Year's week, we lost literally a legend. And anyone that had anything to do with the media, PR, business, players, Earl Weaver, my cousin, knew of and knew and sometimes had to get through Bob Brown to make anything happen. And it was bigger than a piece of agate type in the newspaper, Rick Vaughn, but the passing of Bob Brown made me say, you know, I got to reach to Rick Vaughn. I'm going to reach to Lisa Waskowitz. I'm going to reach to Marty Conway. I'm going to sniff around, find Charlie Steinberg. And at some point in the next couple of months, have some, because I don't talk any baseball around here. I mean, I got Festivus this week. That's nice. You're a football guy too. Rick Vaughn, the longtime PR czar of all things Orioles. Vaughner, I don't break out my Oriole jersey too much, certainly not over my State Fair atop. And I have the number one Oriole fan thing here, the Resig Drew. So how are you? You sunning yourself in Tampa these days? Where are you, man?
Yeah. I'm actually in Palm Harbor, which is a little bit closer to the Gulf than Tampa. So we're about 10 minutes from the Gulf. So we're doing great. Weather's terrific today. And,
enjoying life.
I always
have USOPs on in January. You got to say, oh, the weather's great here today. It's not great here, by the way.
I won't hurt you too bad with that.
Look, before I introduce you, for those who don't know you, Rick was the PR director of the Orioles during my time in the late 80s and early 90s. Bob Brown was a bit emeritus at various points at that point. I got to meet Bob probably in 84, 85, 86, which makes me 15, 16 at the time. He knew I was Louie's cousin. He liked Louie. There were certainly some people that I learned later that didn't like Louie and didn't like me because they didn't like Louie. And I thought it was just me. But Bob was an encyclopedia, literally. He was the walking history of Orioles baseball. And, I wanted to honor him and tell some stories about him. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to call Vaughn. We're going to talk Joe Madden. We're going to probably talk Washington football team and George Mason and all that. So probably Major League and Rick Vaughn, the wild thing. But I like the Bob Brown thing really kind of struck me because I thought we need to talk about him because there's not enough Bob Brown going around sports enough anymore for me.
Absolutely. That's very well said. You know what? I started with the Orioles in Thanksgiving week of 84. And the reason I went there, I mean, it was the Orioles. So yes, but really was going to the opportunity to work for Bob. Bob had the best reputation in baseball at the time. And let me, you know, for those people who don't remember the history of that franchise way back, you know, in the 60s and the 70s and through at least half of the 80s, the Orioles were considered, they were the team. Now, obviously they won a lot of games and that had a lot to do with it. You know, Weaver and Brooks and Frank and Palmer and the whole gang, but they were a complete organization. They were that way from top to bottom. They were very well respected within the game, among other teams, among the writers, among the scouts, and that kind of stuff happens with your interaction with those teams. And the people that interact were not just Frank Cashin, not just Harry Dalton. It was people like Phil Itzo, who was the traveling secretary for the Orioles all those years, and one of the best people I've ever met.
Wonderful man. Wonderful man.
Yeah, it taught me so much about life on the road with the Major League.
By the way, Phil did things for me after Angelos threw me out and treated me like garbage, much like you did kind things for me. Phil worked there and still did. He was the only one who did kind things for me in the aftermath. Phil was just a wonderful, I don't want to talk about Bob without talking about Phil, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, that's exactly how it was for me. Phil and Bob were kind of joined at the hip from what I learned. You know, they taught me different things, but you're talking over three decades, the Orioles were considered the top organization. And again, not just because they won, because the way they conducted themselves, the way their players conducted themselves, the way they conducted themselves within the other teams, and they were to be so respected. And Bob and Phil were such a key part of that. And if you were in the organization, you knew that. You didn't know it if you weren't in the organization because, you know, nobody knows who the road secretary is. Some people might have known Bob, but Bob was never out there seeking publicity for himself. He loved the Orioles so much that it was all about the team. And what a great way to grow up. So for me, I grew up in that organization, and Bob and Phil were the two people that taught me how to behave and what it meant to represent something that so many people cared about. You know, don't ever forget that. There's so many people out there that care about it. You better do the best job you can do. And Bob was, I thought I knew what thorough was until I went to work for Bob. And I remember my second week on the job, I had done something and I took it over to his office and put it on his desk. And he came back over like 20 minutes later and he just said, he just looked at me, put it on the desk. He goes, "Now go finish this because this isn't done yet, you know?" And I, you know, that's how, from that point forward, I was like, you are gonna take every rock and look underneath it. You're gonna do everything you can to please Bob and to keep that that level of professionalism and that level of integrity where it needed to be, because you were representing the best franchise in baseball. And so I know a lot of people don't know that name, but you're right. That name needs to be kept alive because he had so much to do with the culture surrounding the team and how the team interacted with the media and other teams. And it was like, I couldn't have grown up in a better place. And Bob was tough. Don't get me wrong. Bob could be very tough when he needed to be, but he still knew, he knew how to conduct himself, and he knew the players respected him so much.
Rick Vaughn is our guest. He's sunning himself in Tampa after a long run as the PR czar of all things Tampa Bay Rays or Devil Rays before that. And how many years did you do? 20 years with the Rays when you left here?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. 20 years. 10 years with the Orioles, 20 with the Rays.
And five minutes with the Redskins.
And 2 years for the Redskins.
So you did 32 years, and your entree was Bob. Where did you come from? I know you went to George Mason, and you had some baseball in you, and you were an Oriole fan, but I don't know what you did before you landed. How did one get a job with the Orioles in November of 1984?
Yeah, you know what? It's like anything else. I was in the right place at the right time, you know, and I had been you're right. I went to George Mason University. I worked as the sports information director at a couple of schools, including American University when Gary Williams was there. So I had Gary for 2 years, you know, way, way, way back in the day. You know, that was
what, Valvano there?
Valvano, the brother? He was at Iona, I think, maybe when I was at American.
Okay. Bob Valvano, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. But Gary, we had 2 years with Gary, and, you know, as everybody got to know Gary, you know, it was two of the best, most fun years I ever had, because we were American University. We were not Maryland. We were not Georgetown. We were in that.
You play at Bender? Is that where you play your games?
We actually, that's a great question, because we played our games at Fort Myers over in Virginia at the Army base there. We didn't have a gym on campus.
I've been in Bender Auditorium one time in my life. Do you want to guess what it was for? I saw Nirvana. nobody saw Nirvana. I mean, he died. You know what I mean? I saw Nirvana at Bender Auditorium. So that's the only reason I dated a girl from America. That's the only reason I know what it's even called. But
It was so much fun because we were getting, I mean, AU was getting kids that were pretty good inner city kids in DC that went to school, maybe got a Division I ride, but they weren't going to start, you know, and they kind of missed home, and they would come back to DC and Gary would get them. And so we had, you know, we had some pretty good players, but usually they were either undersized or there was something maybe lacking that they couldn't start at a lot of Division I clubs. And you know how Gary was. Gary was the same way at AU as he was at Maryland. His teams reflected his personality, and we played, you know, the whole floor. We pressed, we pushed, you know, everything.
Intensity.
Unbelievable, you know. And so we had so much fun. That was before the tournament was 64. I think back then it was 32. So we went to the NIT. Both years I was there, and we just had so much fun, and everybody got into it. That little gym over in Fort Myers, we only could put about 3,000 people in there, but we filled it every night, and people got into that style of play. And I'll never forget. I got to tell you one quick story.
I didn't even know you worked in basketball. This is great. Yeah. I'm learning stuff. Vaughn, I've known you 35 years, and I'm learning stuff. This is great. I'm sitting here and let you tell me stories.
Well, one Gary story that, in my mind, really put Gary on the map in terms of a national thing. We were our second year, my second year there, so it was probably like 83. We went down to play Tennessee in the Volunteer Classic. Okay. So we were the sacrificial lamb to play the Vols in the first round of this tournament. Tennessee was like, they were like 10th in the country. So we're going down.
I've been in that gym, that little checkerboard gym down. I saw Maryland get their ass kicked there one year in the tournament.
Well, we go down there and I'm going around to all the TV stations, you know, taking them our highlights and trying to pump us up a little bit. And nobody down there even knew where we were located. So we play them. And with 3 seconds left in the game, we're winning by 1 point with 3 seconds left, and we have the ball. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. We're going to knock off the number 10 team in the country in their own tournament. So we go to throw the ball in, and we had a center who was like 6'7". It was like a just such a kid, had so much heart, Juan Jones. He throws the ball in, going deep. Their guy picks it off at half court, takes one bounce, and hits the shot at the buzzer, and we lose. But I'll tell you what, that game in my mind, everybody went, whoa, what almost just happened here? And Gary, I thought that game got Gary noticed really big time.
Next thing he's in Columbus, and here we go, right?
Yeah, he was gone the next year. He went to BC, then Columbus, then Maryland, and the rest is Hall of Fame history. So, so I was at AU. And then you probably don't even know about this either. The United States Football League came along.
Oh, of course.
And so I got the job as the PR director of the Washington Federals.
Really?
Yeah, it was not a good experience. We played 2 years and we were horrible. We were, we played 18 games. I think we were 2-16 and 3-15 in our 2 years there. And that didn't go well.
Did you read Perlman's book?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Football for a buck, man. You know, I mean, I got to get Perlman on. He's wrote a basketball book, and I missed a turn with him before the holidays. But the USFL story is worth reading. We'll leave it at that, right?
Yeah,
literally.
It's exactly. So I was there 2 years, and then they moved that team to Orlando, and I was not asked to go with them, which was fine. And then I don't know if you even remember this either, but back in 1984, U.S. hosted the Olympics in L.A. in 1984. And this is pretty much, I think, what helped me get the Orioles job was that they had different soccer venues of the Olympics around the country, just their qualifying rounds of the Olympics. I mean, it was the Olympics, but to their credit, they put a venue in Boston. They put a venue in San Francisco. They had the one in L.A., and the other one was in Annapolis. They played the games. The first round Olympic soccer games were played in at Navy. And they had a PR person all lined up. And at last minute, I guess they quit or whatever. And the guy called me and he said, you know anything about soccer? And I'm like, yeah, sure.
They play with a ball.
Right. So I got to work. I was the PR person for the soccer games at Annapolis in 1984. So I actually was employed about 2 months there, but I worked very heavily with the Baltimore media, obviously. It was a big story. You know, this was as close as we were going to get to the Olympics. And so I had that opportunity, and that's when I got to know people like Vince Bagley and people, you know, from the media there. And I got a good rapport with them. And then when the Orioles had an opening in November, I don't know if someone from the Baltimore media recommended me. I'm not really sure, but Bob Brown called me, and that's how it happened. And I was so fortunate. So that Olympic gig, which was only 2 months, which was a blast, by the way. I got to live in Annapolis for 2 months.
Who played? Did anybody like did Germany? I mean, who were the teams?
Well, you know what? I probably won't remember them all, but I do remember this. France won our round and advanced, and they won the gold medal that year. So France won the gold medal, and you know, we had a couple of other teams that were small, or countries that were smaller countries.
I'm conflating that with the World Cup, in D.C., yeah, which was different era, 10 years later.
Yeah. And this was unbelievable. to get to work with the people at the Naval Academy, because they were the host of it, was unbelievable. I mean, you talk about efficient. You know, I've never been around people like that in my life.
And then Bob Barr put the bar, and Bob Brown put the bar here and said, here's where the bar is.
It really did. Yeah.
Rick Vaughn, whose bar is now set by Joe Madden. Tell me what you do for Joe, getting current, because I do want to go back and pick up some more Oriole magic and even, you know, just talk about the state of sports during COVID, because it's been a crazy year since you and I got together.
It really has. In some ways, I'm almost like his assistant, I think. I mean, I am technically the director of his foundation, which is the Respect 90 Foundation, his charitable foundation, and I have a lot of fun working with him on that. You know, Joe's one of these people, he's like, you know, when we started it back in 2015, you know, he was like, people are saying, well, you know, you need to do this. And Joe was like, look, I don't want any money in our account. I want to get it all out to people that need help, you know, so I help him with the foundation. We try to raise some money. We identify charities that we need to help. We work primarily in the areas that Joe and his wife Jay have called home, you know, in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. We still do some stuff in Chicago. We are very involved down here in Tampa, because Joe still lives here in the off season, although he hasn't been here much this off season. And then we're doing stuff out in Southern California, and we do a little bit out in Arizona. Those are all places that Joe has lived during his life. And in each market, it's a little different. You know, one really cool thing, and I think I probably mentioned this on the show before, but I'll mention it again briefly, is that we here in Tampa, we primarily work with homeless, but we built a field for the Miracle League down here, kids that are with disabilities that play baseball, and we built a brand new field for them, and we partnered with Cal Ripken Senior Foundation, which was a tremendous thing.
I see Cal over your shoulder, man. Now that I got you on Zoom and the dogs are barking, I can see Senior right over your left shoulder. Hey, it almost looks like the guy prodding you in the Animal House thing, kind of over here, you know?
That's part of my Oriole wall there. I've got a lot of good memories there. So we worked with Cal Senior Foundation, and we built a field, and that was one of my coolest accomplishments, or at least helped accomplish, be able to marry Joe and Cal on a project. So that's kind of what we do. I also help, you know, he'll call me from time to time and say, hey, can you help me with this, or can you help me with that? And I keep his schedule, especially in the off season, what he's doing, where he's got to be, who he's talking to. And it's been, you know, Joe has been great through the pandemic, because we talked back in like April after they shut everything down. And he was like, look, you know, when Zoom was starting to really be the thing, and he was like, I need to be involved with that. And he looked at connecting with people. He said, it's like taking ground balls. You know, my job is to connect with people, and I want to be able to keep that going. So doing those Zoom calls, and we did a ton of Zoom calls, and we did a few for the foundation for, you know, a donation, but we did a lot of them just for groups. You know, we probably did 40 different Zoom calls during the summer. Where he was meeting, you know, he was talking to schools, he was talking to classes, he was talking to, and, you know, really any group that approached us. And he just looked at it, how important it was for him to connect with people when he wasn't going to be. He was going to be stuck by himself. And he looked at this as I said, it was like him taking ground balls or something. You know, it was him staying connected with people, using his communication skills, and talking about what we were going through with people, and trying to settle them down, because he has a great way about him of getting people to, you know, really to see the positive and stuff. So
Well, he changed your life, didn't he? He came along, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I remember the first time I met him, and the first time I talked to him, I didn't know who he was. He was wearing funny glasses. We're both freezing our asses off on the bench in San Francisco during the World Series in 2002. And he's got his Anaheim gear, and I saw Madden on the back. I thought that was an interesting way to spell it, right? You know, and after the John part. And I just started talking to him, and everybody talked to him. Like, he was holding court in the dugout, and I'm like, who's this interesting-looking man who's just sort of holding court like some sort of Yoda in the dugout? He's not even the manager, you know what I mean? Like, literally, and the next thing I know, he's associated with you, and I'm still accredited in the media those days, and you got him on the show, and he was kind of a fun guest or whatever, but, I mean, no offense, dude, you guys were the Rays, and we were the Orioles, and it was 2004, 5, 6, whatever it was. Nobody was very good at the time, right? And then I've, like, run into him. I mean, my wife threw out a first pitch a couple years ago and, like, all that, and but I don't know, Joe. I ran into him in your stadium at the Super Bowl at the Taste of the NFL event, and I had a wine circle conversation with him, my wife, and Max Weinberg from the E Street Band, talking about European wines and touring. Literally, that's what we were talking. So I don't know Joe at all, but like I'm the world's biggest Joe fan just because Joe's like cool, right? I mean, people like Joe. It's hard not to like Joe.
He has that ability. I've seen it a million times in the 15 years that I've known him. He has that ability to talk to somebody he's never talked to before. And after 5 minutes, the people walk away and they're like, I think he might be my best friend. You know, I mean, it's just this ability to connect with people and care. And the best thing about Joe for me has always been, no matter what, and, you know, back when he started in 2006 and we were awful, you know, and I remember him saying during that season, hey, we're going to make this place the pit. Nobody's going to want to come to play at the Trop. And we were all looking at him like, okay, you say so. And then he made it happen, you know. And there were so many days, like I'd go into his office and maybe I wasn't, you know, feeling I wasn't in a good place. By the time I left, I was always in a good place. You know, he just had a way. I don't think you ever went to Joe and left Joe in a worse off situation. You were always better when you talked to Joe. And that's an unbelievable trait that he has. And, you know, he is really the smartest guy in the room, but he'll never, ever make you feel that way. You know, he really won't. He just won't. And part of that,
I'm glad he doesn't do that to me.
Well, he just, you know, he's smart enough to know, you know, like his whole thing is about how he doesn't have very many rules for his players. You know, he's smart enough to know that he has to give them some freedom, and that's how he's going to earn their respect. And that's kind of at the core of his whole way of running a clubhouse is, you know, giving his players some freedom and respecting them that they will do the right thing and getting that respect in return.
As much as I could talk to you about the division-winning Washington football team, I'll keep it on baseball during a Festivus week for you. We'll wrap with this.
Okay.
Where are you on all? I mean, you could still be working for the Rays right now. I had Marty Conway on talking about Bob Brown, but just what the job of being involved in a front office in Major League Baseball is during this particular thing where we don't know where the end of this is. Baseball's really in a tough way right now in a lot of ways.
Yes. Yeah, it's a... The sport has so many things right now that are facing it. I think this is a very critical time, and it's not all because of COVID. You know, I think we've gotten out of the fact that of realizing that, hello, here we are still in the entertainment business. You know, I think we've lost track of that. I was glad to see the Mets' new owner bring that up when he was talking his initial comments when he took over the Mets, that they realized that they are in the entertainment business. It cannot solely be, you know, about the analytics. You know, I mean, I hate to bring this up, but I mean, you know, to me, baseball right now is in a real battle with itself in terms of the analytics. You know, I mean, Joe is right in the middle of that. Joe sees the value of analytics, but he also sees great value in the heartbeat, you know, about the makeup of the person. How does analytics affect players? You know, how does Blake Snell really feel? I know what he said, and I know Scott Boras is his agent, and he said all the right things, but deep down, how does Blake Snell really feel about the Rays when they take him out of that game in the sixth inning? He's pitched the best game of his life. Blake has four really good pitches, and all four of them were plus pitches that night. And he was making the Dodgers hitters look terrible. And yet they decided to take him out of the game. And a lot of people tell me, well, they weren't going to win that game 1-0. Well, maybe they were. Their pitching's pretty good. So I think you have to go back and look, how did that really affect Blake's attitude going forward with the Rays? You take me out of that position, you are denying me an opportunity to reach greatness. And that's kind of what analytics does, I think. I think it doesn't allow the players to be great. It doesn't allow the entertainment part of it. I mean, are we ever going to see those battles that we used to see back in the day, you know, when Palmer was facing Catfish Hunter? And are we going to see those anymore? Now, we might see them, but are they really going to be worth watching when both pitchers are out before they get to the lineup the third time? I mean, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying I'm worried for the sport. that we're, you know, we're missing those opportunities to create tremendous memories.
They shouldn't be losing people like me and that and everybody around me. And I'm in Baltimore, Vaughn. You know, I mean, I don't know how they're going to rev this engine back up as bad as they're going to be. And you've been in that space. This is the last year of the deal. This is the 30th year of the lease. There's just a lot of things going on here that I'm gravely concerned about, you know, and I don't see the smartest guy in the room, right? You know what I mean? I don't know where that guy, I don't see great leadership, certainly not here. It hadn't been here since you left. And then there's what's going on everywhere. And you know, I'm concerned. I really am.
Well, I mean, look, don't get me wrong. We have so many great young players and there's so many good things that are going on with the game. But when I see, you know, I think, okay, let's talk. There's this war going on, I think, between the analytics and like everybody, the other part of it, and Joe says this all the time, it's like everybody is singing from the same sheet of music. Everybody's looking at the same data and it's a really not very compelling, you know, game anymore. I mean, you kind of know, we all sort of wait to see what's going to happen. You know, I mean, even I'll never forget that Red Sox Dodgers World Series game, the 15 inning game. All we were doing was watching it and we're waiting for somebody to hit a home run. You know, there was not going to be any hit and run. Nobody was going to bunt. Nobody was going to steal. Those elements of the game are being taken away, you know, and it's really just everybody swinging from their rear end. And I don't know that that's very exciting. And I'm going to go back. Now, let's take last year out of it. But the 7 years prior to that, the attendance in Major League Baseball, it isn't going up. And so this whole idea is not – I don't think it's presenting a very compelling
– They need to start recruiting people, you know, and I don't know that they know how to do that. I don't know that the DNA of the people involved will ever come to me and say, hey, dude, you might want to come back. Right. You know, after 15, you might want to, your name's Aparicio and you care and you might want to come, that will never happen here. With this group, you know, and there's too many people like me, you know, that's really the problem.
Well, that to me is a pretty scary thing. You know, I know they're skewing, they want to get young people involved, but we still have a pretty good fan base of people like you and I'm older than you are.
You're saying I'm not young? Whoa, 52. I gotta let you go, man. But I'd love to have you on more during baseball season, and if there is such a thing. And you know, I hope we're not going to lose our team. I hope we get better ownership. I hope the sport turn. I hope you're here having a beer with me 5 years from now. We're playing a playoff game, you know. And if we're together, we'll have good seats because I know you. So hey, man. You know, one day have Joe visit too, man. We'd love that. I'd love to talk some ball and. I appreciate you. And I'm sorry I think of you when people die and this and bad things happen, but I've gone through all these pictures. It's been a hell of a ride. You know what I mean? All these years. It really has been, man. I see the good work you're doing, especially up in Hazleton with Joe, and it always it gets it off of the cap. So, well, I'll make you visit every couple of months, okay?
Just give me a call anytime, Nestor. Good to see you, bud.
Longtime PR czar of the Orioles and then the Tampa Rays, now partnering with Joe Madden, doing all the respect work that Joe does, not only in Southern California and then in Tampa, but up in Pennsylvania as well. You can find Rick Vaughn. If you're a professional out on LinkedIn or other places, he's out there doing the good work. You can find me out on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Instagram, and doing it all at WNST.net, AM 1570, where we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.